are listening to Teacher Talk It, supporting teachers, parents and students worldwide. www.teachertalkit.co.uk. Like, subscribe and follow to stay in the know.
Maybe it's because English teachers like writing. Maybe we get students to write too much, but they write so much, but we can't possibly mark all of that. It's just not physically possible. If I spent my entire life marking all the work that students wrote, I think I would still have marking left to do.
We help teachers thrive and survive with classroom ideas, cutting-edge school resources, and research-informed teacher training materials. You will also hear discussions on the policy, guidance, and research-based publications.
This week, listen to Ross McGill, founder of Teacher Toolkit, interview Peter Holland, a league teacher for film and media studies and teaches English as well. In today's podcast, some of the things we'll be discussing are the difficulties of students accessing media texts and resources during the pandemic, the role mobile phone cameras play in media studies today, and Interfilm Plus, a free streaming platform powering access to films in schools.
Hello everyone, this is Ross at Teacher Talk at the most influential blog on education in the UK. Today I'm delighted to be joined by Peter Holland. Peter is a lead teacher for film and media studies and teaches English. Good afternoon, Peter.
Good afternoon.
So for listeners, my apologies, I've done a bit of a blooper, I didn't press the record button, so the first couple of minutes, Peter and I have already had a good discussion about his work in life, so I think I kind of cut to the chase. We're recording this, 18 months into the pandemic, and I wanted to just get the working life of a teacher, I suppose. How has the whole journey been, you know, specifically for your curriculum, the resources of teaching media, for you as a teacher and for your children?
So it's been tough, not because actually getting students to work on technology has made it easier. You know, a lot of the work we do, they would end up having to do on a computer anyway, or they would be using a computer at the same time. So that hasn't been a difficulty, but the difficulty has been getting them to access the texts that we look at. In some ways, I was actually lucky because as a media teacher, the stuff we look at is already digital. So I could direct them to digital versions of it. You know, YouTube does have the odd clip here and there. Some of the stuff we look at is freely available on things like iPlayer, etc. So that was great. But, you know, speaking as an English teacher, trying to get students to engage with a whole text is very difficult because unless that text is out of copyright, you can't find digital versions that every student is able to access. And the same was then true, of course, with film and media in that, you know, students cannot access some of those texts. You know, if we're looking at a particularly modern piece of television or film, you're beholden to the students having access to a particular streaming service where it might be on, but it might only be on for a certain amount of time. You can't do that guided watching that you would perhaps do with them, where you would be stopping and talking about it. And that has put in its own problems. And so we were very much reliant on students being a bit more independent and doing their non-exam assessment instead, which in itself is a challenge, especially when for many months they were almost locked in the house, so couldn't even go out and, you know, do a bit of filming or take some photographs for a magazine front cover, all those sorts of things.
So we mentioned earlier that you've been teaching 11 years. Is it safe to say this year has been probably the toughest, you know, in comparison to the NQT journey and all those types of things?
I think so, yeah, for very different reasons. Like, I mean, I'm sure you remember being in NQT where you've just got no idea what's going on a lot of the time and you're just hoping that everything's going well. Now we found ourselves in a very different circumstance where none of us really knew what was going on. So there wasn't even someone you could look to for that bit of advice a lot of the time. You were muddling through trying to work out what works, what doesn't work. You would try things and then discover, oh, that doesn't work because these students are accessing your lesson via a phone, which means that they can't access half of the technology that you could even build your basic lessons on, which, you know, it's thrown a lot of spanners into the work, certainly, and then to then have to try and assess where those students are with less than half a year's worth of work and having missed so many chunks and not knowing necessarily which students have missed which bits, because have they been in a live lesson? Yes. Have they engaged with that live lesson as well as they would have done? Can you ever be certain without sitting with that child and knowing that they've engaged with that lesson 100% like they would in a classroom.
Mm-hmm.
So the challenge is very real. Now, Peter, a question I always ask everyone that I interview with, a bit of a kind of fun one, but just to kind of unpick your own history. What were you like at 16 yourself at school?
I was a nerd, in the nicest of terms. Like I don't want to say I was a perfect student, because I'm sure that there will be teachers who taught me looking at this going, no, that's a lie. But I'd like to say I was hardworking. I tried to do my best, and I enjoyed school. Unlike so many of the young people that we work with. So I suppose that's one of the things that often I find a bit of a challenge, is where you've got those disabilities.
There's nothing wrong with being a nerd. Say the word passion. Where did the teacher conversation happen and start? You know, what point in your life?
I don't know that it ever did. I think my earliest memories, I think I remember actually, like, you know, where you play those make-believe games where you are something. And I think teacher was the one that was consistent. And it wasn't actually, I think, until I started my teacher training that I really actually thought about it and thought, is this the right thing for me? I went to university to get my degree, knowing, right, I'm then going to go and do a PGCE. And it wasn't until I'd got all of that, and then especially after, you know, your NQT year, that really tough year where you're thinking, what can I do with, my BA is in English. There was a part
of it. So where's your career taking you? Have you been in a couple of schools?
No, I was very lucky to find my first placement school was a school where I went, I could definitely work here. And then luckily a job came up just as I was at that point of, you know, applying in my teacher training. And I've been here for 11 years.
Wow, great. And
yeah, it feels right being here. If you speak to my head of department, she has definitely told our head of trust that I will be here until the day I die, which I don't know whether it's true, but I've certainly not had plans to move on.
Listen, I think it's very admirable when teachers find a school that they're very happy with, and not only they thrive, but the school encourages their professional growth. I think it's becoming a little bit more common. I think a lot of people are quite shy about saying I've been somewhere for 30 years, but it's also very rare. So if you can find that right school and keep your motivation up, I think it's a good thing. So in terms of media, you're teaching English, how do you keep motivated?
Do you know what? I think because I'm not a specialist in film or media, I think that's what keeps me motivated, because I know that I am maybe one lesson resource or one change to a curriculum ahead of the game at best. And so I've got to keep on top of it, because if I don't keep on top of it, I'm going to fall behind. And I think that really started with, you know, me being thrown in with that group of year 13s who had already done a year of A-level film studies, and I was teaching them, and I wasn't even teaching them an easy topic, I was teaching them new wave cinema, which I'd not even heard of until I was given
now, the... What would you say to, you know, the cynics out there, you know, parents, non-specialists or politicians that's just watching films? How would you defend that subject knowledge?
I mean, it's not at all. It's an art form in every way, shape and form. I can't watch a film now without dissecting it like you would, a painting or a sculpture. And so many students have told me that I've ruined films for them forever, because they cannot watch them now without pulling them apart, looking for all of that clever
that's
work that's gone into it.
And what's been the general, you know, what are the kind of pressure points for teachers of media and English in general, not for the pandemic, but, you know, all teachers suffer from a bit of workload, and it's one of my areas of research and fascination. What is it for teachers of media specifically?
For media, I think it is the technological change combined with the knowledge of all of those things. You know, I will freely admit to my students, I'm not an expert in things like Photoshop or video editing. I know the basics and I can guide them through that, but there's so much technology out there, and they can access so much technology as well. The stuff that we've got in schools could be 10, 15 years out of date, because it's just cost prohibitive to keep changing mm-hmm. it. And so I know very much that the things that we are perhaps teaching them, they're then going to have to go and learn some of those themselves. And I suppose media in particular, and like the specialist equipment is very expensive. When you take students to, say, a university to see what they're offering in their film studies department or their media department, you look at it and go, I couldn't even think about asking a manager for one of these cameras, let alone the 20 that you've got. And these students are expected to be able to come in and use that. So we have to set them up with that knowledge instead so that they can use the technology well rather than having to learn to use it as well. So
is there a kind of some generic equipment that you provide kids in class or something that you might give them that they can take away?
So we're very lucky in that we've got, like, most digital cameras do a very good job of it now, and actually their phones are very good. You know, having spoken to the exam boards, they are very clear that actually the technology that they've got on their phones now does the job that, you know, when I started teaching, you wouldn't have even thought about asking a child to film that. You'd have lent them a camera, or we were very lucky that we also won some filmmaking equipment from Interfilm because of our participation with them, and that has helped, you know, having a green screen, having a GoPro that we can lend to students. And actually there is a lot more of that sort of sourced or free software out there. I mean, I routinely, when we're doing screenwriting, I get students to use a free web page that does the job better than I could do in school.
I remember, you know, when I was teaching media in 2010-11, it was the scan disc cameras for the, you know, I think it might have been 3 megapixels at the time or something ridiculous. If we put your English hat on, what are the workload pressures for you as an English teacher?
Marking, because it's that difficulty of what do you mark firstly, because, you know, maybe it's because English teachers like writing, maybe we get students to write too much, but they write so much, but we can't possibly mark all of that. It's just not physically possible. If I spent my entire life marking all the work that students wrote, I think I would still have marking left to do. So it's trying to manage that. But also, from our perspective, making sure that students have access to literature to read. Students read all of the time, but what they're reading is, you know, things like social media, etc., which is not of the quality that it needs to be. But trying to get them to read and value that. And making sure that we've got up-to-date texts for them to look at, as well as, you know, the curriculum text that we need. It puts a lot of pressure on, because good quality books aren't cheap.
And in terms of resources, you know, what particular text might you be looking at with your Key Stage 4 or 5 students in English right now?
So with our Key Stage 4 students at the moment, we're doing Macbeth, which obviously from a cost point of view is a little bit easier because it is out of copyright. But finding performance there is the bigger issue, and getting students to watch it can be much more challenging. A Christmas Carol, because it's a classic literary heritage text, and Inspector Calls. Again, those are not too difficult for us to access, but actually accessing in particular performance for the two plays is a bigger issue for us. It's actually getting better now that we're in a much more digital age.
And what about media? You know, what would be your examination students? What are they working on right now?
So right now they are actually working on their non-exam assessment, because we set them up for the summer with the idea of, right, you go away and you take all your photographs, etc. But bookended between television in the global age, it's called. So we look at some British TV and compare it to a foreign language television show. And so we start with the British TV this side of the summer, and then first thing back we'll be looking at The Returned, that brilliant French zombie drama.
Great. So, you know, I actually love teaching media, and I guess, you know, that non-coursework brief really unleashes a lot of creativity in our students, doesn't it? You know, we're talking here about Interfilm also, a resource. How have you been using that resource, that kind of first, it's a free streaming platform, isn't it?
Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. It's revolutionised things. You know, we've run a film club at the school for quite a long time, and this year I wasn't sure how we'd even manage to start thinking about it because of all the restrictions, etc. But one of the things we have been able to do is to move it into our English lessons. So the text we are teaching, we've been very lucky in that the choices we'd made are also choices that Interfilm have available. You know, we've used clips from films like Kes when we're teaching that Kestrel to a Knave to our year sevens and helping them to see the social injustice going on there, the look at poverty. The story is actually, although it's very Northern and our students aren't Northern, a lot of it, I think, still chimes with them and resonates with them, even though it's quite an old story. We've been able to show them clips from The Tempest to help exemplify the bits of it that we're looking at with our Year 8 students that they can visualise, because, you know, a Shakespeare text is never easy to access when all you've got is the written word.
I'm assuming, you know, all the copyright things are dealt with for you. Is it sequenced in terms of your curriculum so things are easy to find?
Yeah, so it's very easy to find the films on Interfilm. You just do the search, and then there are some that still are available for order as DVDs, but there are an increasing number that are going on for streaming purposes. So there are at least 150 on there already, and I've been in talks with Interfilm about the sorts of things that we need for film studies, and they're looking at which ones they can perhaps also put on there. It just aids you so much because you don't have to think about, have we got enough copies of a DVD? Have we got DVD players around? You can drop in and out of it, and you know that you aren't breaking any laws in any way, shape, or form. I'm sure many of us have used streaming services that we really shouldn't be using in school, but at the time it was, you know, it's a case of, well, we've got access to this and we've all got it, so we could use it with the students.
Yeah, I guess it's also, you know, where is the DVD player in the school, isn't it? You know, getting how time evolves very quickly.
Trying to get them to hook up as well. I mean, gone are the days where you had the one TV player that you used to roll into a classroom and everyone in that classroom would get excited. But,
so tell me, Peter, how would you use Interfilm into a lesson? How would you maybe design a lesson around it? You know, maybe for any NQTs listening out there who are just wanting to use the resource in general, or are new media studies teachers, how do you go about that thought process?
So once you've found the film on Interfilm Plus, it's really simple. You think about, what do I actually want students to get out of this? What am I trying to get them to see? And it could be a media or a film thing, you know, like your key terminology, your camera angle, etc. Or it could be that you actually want to teach them a concept or a theme. We've been talking to like our IT department, who are using things like The Imitation Game to teach the development of computers. And you can, what you do then is you start thinking about, right, what is the core thing I want these students to get out of it, and putting together perhaps a set of questions for them to have in front of them to be thinking about whilst they're watching, or that good old standard of, you know, pause it, ask them a question, get them to write something down, have a discussion with students. I think because Interfilm has got so many of the more modern texts on there, or things that you've already watched, you're not on that back foot of having, of thinking, right, well, I've just put this DVD on and I don't know what's going to be coming up. You've probably already seen it, and you're then thinking, right, what do I want them to take away from this? What questions could I ask them? What could I be asking them to do about it? What reflection might I ask these students to do? And because of it being digital, it's so easy to drop in and out as well. You know, you're not having to think, right, which chapter of the DVD do I have to go to? You can go, right, I know it's 25 minutes in, so let's just click to 25 minutes in, and you can be playing it within seconds.
Great. And how do you go about... you know, give us a general overview of your film club that you have at school. How does it work? Who attends? When does it happen?
So because of us being a secondary school, I run it very differently too. I know a lot of my primary colleagues would run it during school time. We run it after school once a week.
Right.
We have a variety of students coming. The last time I was able to run a physical club, they were all year sevens, and we watched a few films, and I made some choices with them about, you know, let's watch a film that you want to watch, then let's watch a film that maybe you wouldn't have chosen to watch, but I think would be interesting for you to have a look at and try and broaden their film watching. But actually, a lot of what we then did was filmmaking, which Interfilm really support. They've got lots of resources for you to help guide you through that, especially if you're new to it. And I suppose for me, the nice thing about that is that, unlike in film studies where I'm asking students to make a film for a particular reason, this was very much a case of, right, what do you want to make? Why are you going to make it? Let's talk through it. Let's go through all those processes with students. But giving them that freedom to make a film collaboratively in school, with knowing that I was giving them some guidance, but at the same time, it was their choice. They were the ones doing everything from script writing to filming and editing.
And I'm just thinking, you know, if I've got a teacher that listen, or maybe a librarian even, who's thinking, right, they want to start a film club, what words of wisdom would you advise? You know, any top tips or things to avoid?
The one thing to avoid is thinking that it's going to be difficult. You know, it isn't a difficult thing. Sign up for Interfilm. It takes moments. There are a few little agreement things that you have to make sure get signed off. But so long as you are a state-funded school, you've got all the licenses anyway in place. So that's just okay. That's just a box-ticking exercise, really, to make sure that you are the right school, etc. Then publicising it to your students, perhaps pick a year group, especially if you're a bit uncertain about it. Your younger students are often the ones who are most excited about it, but at the same time, a group of year 10s or 11s would love that opportunity to do something that they don't feel is educational, but actually is. And then, you know, doing that, doing the very basics of, right, let's just watch a film. Pick one to start off with. I always try and pick something popular, so a Disney is usually a good choice. If especially if you're ordering in a DVD from Interfilm, or you've got.
I'll come to that club for a Disney.
What's
on the playlist at the moment?
We haven't actually had the chance because of being remote. So instead this year I've been asking students to write reviews of films. And it's interesting the broad span of films that they've looked at. You know, they've looked at everything from things like, we talked about The Karate Kid, the new Bill and Ted film, and that allowed us to have the conversation with I was talking to the student, I said, oh, have you watched the originals? And she went away and watched the originals and then came back and went, oh no, I preferred those. And it was that same sort of conversation, but sadly we just couldn't have it in person. I've got students who were in film club last year before we had to lock down, who every time I'm on the playground harangue me, asking me when we're getting back to in-person film club. You know, because they just loved the freedom. You know, they got into a lot of arguments over what films we were going to watch, and one of them held it over some of the others that we were definitely going to watch the films that they'd picked. And I used to just sit there with a wry smile thinking, well, we might do. Like, I'd like to watch it, but I know the rest of you don't want to watch it, so I'm not going to force that issue.
Now, is there a behind-the-scenes staff film club going on, or is that something that's not happening?
We've certainly talked about it, especially with Interfilm Plus, but of course, because of current restrictions, we can't really gather. I would hate for us to all gather and then our head have to send out the email to parents saying, yes, we're sorry, your children can't come in because half the staff having to isolate because they watched a film. We've certainly talked about it. And I think it's something that, from a staff wellbeing point of view, would be lovely.
Be fabulous.
And I know other film clubs that do that. Having spoken to other teachers, they have got a staff film club where they will do.
Yeah,
that.
And I'm just having visions of what your staff kind of Christmas film might look like, you know, and who edits it, and you know, all the ideas emerge. And I suspect, a school like yourself that probably does things like that.
We have done, yeah. The problem was that the duty of editing said film fell on me, finding the time to do it, being an English teacher as well.
Workload, isn't it?
Yeah, it has been difficult. So we have done them in the past. This year we didn't, but then we did a lot of other film things. I've just gone back and re-edited our transition video for our year six.
Sure. And I guess you would have been doing a lot of lockdown editing perhaps.
Yes, yeah. It took a quite a lot of time to get all of those things, you know, just arranging how we could film things when you mm-hmm. could only have a few people around, or you'd got to try and find the right distancing, etc., had been difficult.
Now, Peter, we're reaching my 20-minute barrier, and I'm conscious teachers are busy people on journeys to work and things. So just to kind of wrap up our conversation, I kind of got little notes here that as we've had a conversation, I've got my usual questions that I kind of pose to people that I'm working with. So no pause or hesitation if possible, and just kind of quick responses. I'll start off with the first kind of tough question, I suppose. What are your top tips for getting more money out of your head teacher for your equipment?
Educational benefit. If you can explain how it will improve those results of those students, then mm-hmm. I think any head is going to say, yes, here, have some money.
Fantastic.
You can evidence it.
What project are you working on today? What's on your desk?
So I've just finished re-editing our transition video to update it for this year, and also taking some photographs for our celebration evening that was going to be somewhat remote and recorded, and then due to circumstances we've actually had to rejig it again.
Right, okay. Finish the sentence. If I was Education Secretary of State, I would...
give teachers at least 50% extra pay.
Fantastic. There you go. It's official. Favourite film?
Blade Runner, I think.
Blade Runner. Okay. Favourite book?
Oh, that's even harder. I think, actually, it is probably Animal Farm or 1984.
Right. Okay, great. Are you a better English or a better media teacher?
I'd like to say a better English teacher, but I think because media is a bit more engaging for students, I think it comes more easily, even with the challenging theories.
What's your favourite piece of kind of kit or an online app or platform?
Aside from Interfilm Plus, which has revolutionised what we can do in the classroom, Celtex. It's a brilliant set of screenwriting software.
Right. Great. I'm assuming you're doing your kind of dream job, Peter, but what would be that abstract career you never had? Would it be on stage or something like that? Or
No, I cannot think of anything I would hate more. I would love to be an author. I think that was the other thing, you know, as a child, that would have been the thing I would have done had I not gone into teaching, or had I thought you could actually make money doing it.
Well, there you go. Here's a tough one. Who would you recommend I interview next and why?
Ooh, that is very tough.
How about someone in the kind of literary world, or maybe something, you know, dead or alive? Let's make it a little bit easier.
Even
then, harder for me to interview someone that's passed away, though.
yes, it is. No, do you know, that is drawing a blank.
Right, I've got you. Okay, three top tips for an NQT.
Don't worry. Things will work out in the end, even if they don't seem like they're going to. If you think that you're not finished and you need to work harder, you probably have already worked hard enough, and just give yourself a little bit of time. Just remember, there's always another school year.
Fantastic. Okay. What advice would you give your 16-year-old self?
Try being a writer first.
Okay, good. What's your piece of advice for all those English teachers listening to mark smarter?
Pick your battles, pick the big texts, and whole class feedback sheets. It revolutionised our school a few years ago.
Whole class feedback sheets, they are fantastic. Okay, and a last question from me, Peter. What would you hope to be your legacy?
I just hope that there are people out there, even to this day, who, you know, have just got a love of learning something new, who can perhaps apply one or two things that they've taken from a lesson, and maybe will think, oh, I remember doing that in one lesson. And, you know, if it makes just one tiny bit of impact on your life at some point, then actually, I think as teachers, we've made an impact on students.
Absolutely. So fantastic. Thank you, Peter. Well, there you go, listeners. Peter Holland. Peter, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To continue the conversation, head over to www.teachertoolkit.co.uk and our social media channels to access all the links and resources mentioned on today's show. Why not share this with your colleagues and give them the gift of time, reduced workload, and increased impact? Until the next time, before you look after your students, look after yourself.